Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast, where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the exact same story. I'm Catherine Wolf, and I'm a stroke survivor, a speaker, an author, and co-founder of Hope Heals. Tune in here every week for conversations about wholeheartedly living in a good hard story. Join me in this joyful rebellion to the darkness where we discover the treasures hidden in our hurting. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Good Hard Story Podcast. We are so blessed to have you here in this moment. Today, we have the special honor of having the incredible Leah Case with us. Woohoo! Say hello.
Hello. So happy to be here.
And what would you like your title here at Hope Heals to be for our listeners?
Maybe operations?
Operations, head of operations, and acting as my assistant while running my life. So all the things. So what we thought we'd do is we asked Instagram friends to ask me anything, to make some questions that we thought Leah could ask me, and I'll just answer on the spot what some friends wanted to know. So this is going to be wonderful and a bit scary, but I'm excited. So let's jump in.
All right. So this is a great first question, and I'm curious about the answer too. Are you ever in a bad mood?
The honest answer is rarely. However, for instance, you may have noticed last week we had had our big 15th anniversary gala for me living, went straight into a 2-day board retreat, came back on that Wednesday, interviewed Bob Goff for the podcast, flew out on Thursday for Dallas for 2 speaking engagements in Dallas, flew to Memphis for a speaking engagement in Memphis and flew back. And so the middle of that Wednesday, I was virtually stressed / angry / mad at myself for being stressed and angry and just overwhelmed because, as we know, as especially a mother knows in May is no joke. May is like May-cember. It's insanity, the number of...
Absolutely.
all the things, the activities, the special wardrobe on the special day, and don't forget to send the treat, and then, yikes, with, like, last week's travel schedule alone, and, I mean, if you think about it, I slept in 4 different beds other than my own in a week, and anyway, stuff like that, major stress does put me in a pretty bad mood.
Okay. You, the stress mode just puts you on edge
Major
a little bit.
Major stress puts me in a pretty bad mood.
Okay. Well, that's a good one. You know, I think we can all relate to that too, especially any moms listening definitely understand the May-cember.
For sure. It's a thing.
It definitely is. So to power you through May-cember.
Yes.
What is your coffee order?
Ooh, good one. So I love an unsweetened coconut milk latte. And with that, I always love a treat. So a biscotti, a special donut, a croissant, a cronut, whatever. I'm a lover of coffee like none other, but I do not like sweetened coffee. So that's why unsweetened coconut milk or unsweetened anything, really. But then a treat, because I'm a big, big treats person, but not in my coffee. I like the strong flavor of coffee, and that has morphed through the years of me having taken a year off from eating, which I'm not making light of that, but having been NPO or nothing per oral on a feeding tube for almost a year. I think my cravings for coffee became so strong because there is such like a strong, robust flavor that it became an obsession. And I kept the love of the sweet treats. And it's kind of like a thing. Don't wait to celebrate. You may have seen it on social media.
Yeah.
That it's kind of my deal is we don't know what tomorrow holds. So don't wait to celebrate today.
I will say we actually took a cue from you last week, my family, and we had an hour in between events and we didn't know what to do. And so we said, let's get ice cream before dinner, the Catherine Wolf way.
I love it. I love that.
We followed your wise words there.
Well, thank you.
So I have heard from, you know, the grapevine that you guys are opening a coffee shop.
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about that and why a coffee shop?
Oh, well, it parlays perfectly into what we were just talking about. I love coffee. Jay loves coffee. We have become absolutely obsessed. We think when James was born, we started really like drinking a lot of coffee to stay awake.
Get you through the day.
And then it just stuck. And we just became these coffee obsessed people. And we love coffee, so that was probably part of the motivation. But much deeper than our love for coffee was this notion of people with disabilities, A, need a livable wage and meaningful connection with each other, which is given through employment and just community endeavors. Mm-hmm. And the reality of aging people with disabilities is their peer group shrinks so much to maybe a paid caregiver and super aging parents. It's right. Tragic. So MEND, which is the name of the coffee shop, M-E-N-D, MEND, which, by the way, side note, is all about mending this broken world because there has been a tear in the human fabric, and people with disabilities have fallen through the cracks. So we want to mend it. Mm. It's kind of a part of Hope Heals is to mend, get it?
I see what you did there.
Thanks. And as much as we want to employ people who have disabilities to work, and we will also have able-bodied people without disabilities on the outside working with those with disabilities, which is kind of our model, is we mm-hmm. want both. We want the lines to blur. In addition to that, we want the space to have just a new level, a new paradigm of all the accessibility you've ever seen. So super universal design, they call it, that takes everything to a new level. Instead of just some weird table in the back that is supposedly accessible, we actually want to make just the whole entire space just a true experience for people with disabilities, yeah. where there isn't just wheelchair accessibility, but a sensory room for those of us struggling with sensory issues and just appropriate size tables and adjustable tables, depending on the size of your chair or needs, and just really a lot more thoughtfulness. And our deep prayer is that this would catch on, that just a new way of doing business would come, that eventually businesses would not need to retrofit their coffee shop for accessibility, which is expensive and doesn't go well normally.
Right.
But instead, they would always just start with, let's make this truly accessible from the beginning.
Not an afterthought. Yeah.
Exactly.
So MEND is coming to Atlanta.
Yes. I'm sorry. Yes.
The fall.
MEND Coffee and Goods, which I should say a word about goods.
Definitely.
Oh, so cool. So if you know Hope Hill Shop, you may have seen that we have just an assortment of a plethora, honestly, of fabulous products. And every product in the shop is ethically sourced and missionally driven. So every product that we carry doesn't just like we buy it super cheap from child labor in a country that is underdeveloped,
right.
but rather we buy products from people, artisans, at a fair wage. And then we repackage with our branding and sell it to Share Hope. Mend Coffee and Goods will include an in-person retail element from our shop. So products that we have online, we will have an area that's almost like a boutique in our coffee shop where my big dream is coming to fruition and we are finally able to provide basically like a care package service where people can choose, oh, I really want to get the holding cross, or oh, I want to get a candle, or oh, I really want a Hope sweatshirt. I want it packaged up here at the shop and sent to my friend in Arizona, and I'm in Atlanta, that's walking through cancer, or my neighbor down the street who needs some of these yummy cookies from Mend and the Kintsugi picture frame.
Right.
And, you know, I mean,
Beautiful things.
I love this notion. And this has really been a beautiful part of the culture of Atlanta.
Definitely.
Anyway, Mend Coffee and Goods is going to be amazing. Opening in October. And we'll see you there.
Yeah. Check out the show notes for the link and to learn more about Mend. So we're super excited about that. So you referenced earlier not being able to eat for 11 months.
Right.
Which is honestly something I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So what was the first meal you ate and what did you crave during that season?
Oh, funny. Okay. It's always hard when people ask this question because there wasn't one moment I ate again. It was months of thick liquids, then yogurts and puddings, months of like slowly relearning and testing and putting like disgusting.
I was gonna say, that doesn't sound that good, but it probably tasted good maybe.
Oh gosh, like to drink water, they would pour a bizarre powder in that would thicken it enough to where I could drink it. So imagine congealed water.
Yum.
Oh, sick. So yeah, it was awful. And so there wasn't one moment where what was my first meal.
Okay.
It was like months of slowly learning and getting cleared for, you know, one food group at a time. But I can remember there was one Friday. So we were going into the weekend, which felt very special and magical. Where she said, my fellow therapist, this weekend I want you to eat as normally as possible. Just try. I mean, don't try raw vegetables.
Right.
Don't try meat yet. Don't try a few things. But in general, just eat what you can. See how it goes down. And I think I almost cried. I was like,
okay,
really? And she's like, I think at this point you've learned what you're going to be able to tolerate. So just try. And I was like, just try? I feel like I've just won the lottery. And for months, my swallows therapist, which Rachel, if you hear this, hey, I'm still kicking. I'm still eating. Anyway, I can remember in those early days just feeling like, I just need to know that people eat again. I just need to know. So Rachel, can you please tell me, like, do people learn to re-eat after 3 months, 4 months, 5 months? And as the months were going by, I would obsessively ask. So people do learn to eat again after, like, 10 months of no food. And honestly, she very, very diplomatically, and I completely understand, she didn't want to lie, but
right.
She wasn't going to give me false hope.
Right.
And so she would say, I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell, I could read between the lines that very, very rarely. And she would say that. She would say, you know, well, maybe.
Right.
And I just have to give huge props to her because evidently, in retrospect, I've learned it is very, very rare to learn to re-eat again after 11 months of no food. And not just no food, no water, nothing.
Right.
Honestly, the worst part of the whole ordeal was not eating.
You don't realize how much of a part of your life that is until you don't have it anymore.
Oh, totally. I honestly wanted to make a deal with God that, fine, I will never stand, never walk again, because I couldn't walk at that time either.
Right.
But, like, let me swallow again.
Right. Give me food. Give me water.
Give me, because food is so much more than simply eating.
Right.
Food is life. Food is friendship. Food is family and community, gathering. Yeah, all the things. So it's so terribly isolating not to eat. In fact, we have time for a funny story, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So early on after the stroke, when I was still in acute rehab, I noticed that sweet friends of mine would come by my room, but keep going, holding things to another room. And I caught on after about a month of this, that precious sweet friends were bringing meals to my family and they were eating them in a separate room. So they're not like eating in front of me. And I would fantasize about what was in that room. Like, what did they bring? What treats did they bring? All of my favorites. Is there like delicious?
You're sneaking them behind your back.
Totally. I knew there was like almond flavored wedding cake and deliciously prepared sushi and just all my favorites. I just knew were in there. So evidently one night in my sleep, I ripped out all of my machines and got out of bed to try to go to that room and feast. And obviously, I immediately fell because I couldn't walk. And if I would have made it, I couldn't have eaten anything. But it was still such a desperate cry. And then monitors went off. Nurses are running in. It was terrible. But I had a deep desire to eat whatever was in that room. And then fast forward to December of 2008. So at this point, I mean, the stroke was April. So in December, we went back to the South for my sister-in-law Sarah's wedding, and we were going to stay for Christmas.
And you still were not eating at this
still
point.
Still was not eating at all. And on the airplane, Jay had gone to the bathroom, and the stewardess comes up to me and says, "Would you like a cookie?" Now, bear in mind, no one has offered me a cookie since my stroke.
Right.
Like, no one has said, "Would you like a cookie?" So, of course,
yes, ma'am.
I respond, absolutely. I would love a cookie. So I'm like ripping off the packaging, but the whole is like one of those biscotti flavored ones.
Yeah.
Put the whole thing in my mouth, promptly chew it and think I'll swallow it before Jay gets back from the bathroom.
Sneak a quick cookie in.
Right. So, hilariously, of course, it does not go down and I'm coughing and coughing and then spitting it out. But what I don't know is since my face is paralyzed, all of the residue from the cookie, all of the like goop is on my face still. And so Jay comes out of the bathroom, makes eye contact with me, and starts running towards me. He's like, "Did you eat something? What is on your face? What's going on?" And I'm like, "Yes, I broke.
I did.
I ate a cookie and I'm wearing it on my face." And anyway, it was hilarious now. In the moment, it was evidently terrifying. But
right.
Still, I was like, "I didn't die. I'm cold."
I bet it tasted good though. Even if you couldn't swallow it, just the taste.
The taste was heaven and worth it.
Do you still like those cookies?
The Biscoff? Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right, next on our list, and this is a good one. I'm curious about this one. Who is your greatest role model?
Oh, this is a good one. Well, I mean, you got to go with Jesus, but other than Jesus, yes. I would say there is an absolutely amazing woman who you may know of. Many do, but many don't, tragically. Johnny Erickson Tada. Do you know of her?
Yes, her story is amazing.
Oh, yes. Johnny, for those of you who don't know, is an absolutely incredible woman who had a diving accident as a 17-year-old, became a quadriplegic, and now, years later, it's been like almost 50 years, has a worldwide ministry to people with disabilities. She has Wheels for the World, where she gives wheelchairs to people in developing countries.
Wow.
She has a ministry, actually, of glorious family retreats, which are very much like Hope Hills Camp in many ways. And she is an author of many books and speaker. And she is just someone who, if I mean, I could just stop talking about her, has deeply informed this notion of like, be a living survival guide, because she's mine.
Right.
And she's someone who is showing me how to live in a body that doesn't work and with a like ravaged story. And
right.
obviously she was younger than I was even, but we both suffered greatly young and now just are able to share through a ministry that really is touching people with disabilities and without outer disabilities.
Yeah.
And that is just an incredible, incredible blessing.
She was really a trailblazer in the space.
She is absolutely a trailblazer in this space. And the reality is, like, after the stroke, Jay and I were obsessed with finding anything that we could
right.
in this space. Like, who is a Christian who's having a response with faith in the conversation mm-hmm. to their life being totally upended? And the list was extremely short.
Yeah.
I mean, you could not find hardly anything. You could find some fully secular books, but we needed the hope of Jesus.
Right.
And Johnny's book, her story, her book on heaven, all were some of the only resources we could find that really spoke to us in that season.
Yeah. I love that.
Oh, final Johnny story. I can't believe I didn't say this. This is the coolest, crazy full circle part. So Johnny was, you know, my hero
right.
in 2008 after I have the stroke. So fast forward to I severely break my leg in the summer of 2012. And it's a very bad break and I'm back in the wheelchair full time.
Mm.
And that September, I was attending a funeral at my church, Mellon Presbyterian, and I get on the elevator because I can't walk. I'm in a wheelchair full time. So I get on the elevator, and who is in there but Johnny Erickson Tada, who's speaking at a conference. So I say, Johnny, my name is Catherine Wolf, and you may not remember, but years ago, you sent me a letter after I had a stroke because people from my husband's church had written to you and told you, and I'm like, there's no way she'd remember. And she's like, oh, yes, your husband is Jay.
Wow.
And I'm like, what? Oh, my gosh, you know me? And anyway, we started a conversation, and probably in the next, from 2012 to 2018, I would get to be mentored by Johnny and get to go to her incredible office facility called the International Disability Center. And Jay and I would just go and get to have lunch with Johnny and Ken, and they would pour into us and our marriage. And I mean, it's like a dream come true. Like
right.
you're sitting across from her and you're like, is this my life?
Right.
So then it gets even better. So she's mentoring me and she's just, you know, I mean, she's the best. And so I get pregnant with John and I have this big, huge baby shower in Calabasas, California, which is not far from where my church was, Mellor Pres, but we lived in Culver City, which wasn't close. So random. It's actually not too far from Johnny. So I thought, you know what? Might as well send her an invitation. And there's no way she would come, but at least I'm inviting her to little Catherine Wolf's baby shower. Well, Johnny comes, and all the women, and there's a very large group, I think it was around 85 women, are gathered in this home in Calabasas, California. And Johnny wheels herself to the middle of the circle of these women, and she says, ladies, I think we should sing together. And I'm like, you know, I'm just waiting. And she's like, do you know 10,000 Reasons, the Matt Redman song? So let's all sing together. And she just busts into, bless the Lord, oh my soul. And then so 85 precious friends and Johnny Tada are singing, bless the Lord, oh my soul. I'm looking at my pregnant stomach. This is like 7 years after my stroke, I'm looking at my pregnant stomach and then seeing Johnny Tada and this massive group of friends. And I'm like, I clearly died and am in heaven.
And
this
you did
is
not cry, right?
Oh, yeah. Can you even imagine? The tears flow around here, as you know. So I remember thinking, this cannot be an earthly experience. Surely I'm in heaven in this moment because this could never happen. But all that to say, it was real and it was
amazing.
One of the best moments of my life.
That's
sorry,
awesome.
That was a really long answer.
Hey, that's a good one, though. I'm just going to turn
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, really good. You're right.
Okay, I can attest as the receiver of the emails that come through our website that this is a very frequently asked question.
Yes.
What is the brand of your wheelchair?
Isn't that hilarious? People ask nonstop. It's so interesting. So, guys, my wheelchair is an Easy Light Cruiser. I think it's called an Easy Light Cruiser Traveler. Maybe Traveler is not in the name, actually. Look it up online. Easy, like the letters Easy, Light, L-I-T-E, Cruiser. And what makes it so amazing is that it folds up for travel.
Yeah.
It's technically a travel wheelchair. So even though it is motorized, like a scooter, it is motorized, it also becomes a manual chair and as such can be folded up. So it's a great one.
And it's very fast. I can attest from trying to keep up in the airport that it's a zippy thing.
It definitely is. You're right. It's definitely a zippy chair.
Yeah. So we'll link that in the show notes as well.
Oh, for sure.
People definitely ask that. This was another one that got asked a lot. What is your favorite worship song?
Oh, gosh. I have a hard time narrowing it down to one, so I'm going to just share a few if that's okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Nate Miller, who is kind of a obscure to you, but very well known to me, worship artist who was in Los Angeles when I was at a church called Pacific Crossroads, wrote this song called All Will Be Well. Mm-hmm. And it is on Spotify, Apple Music, wherever you get your music. And All Will Be Well is the most stunning worship song I know. But I know that's maybe not the same one these people are thinking, so I'm going to say some of my other favorites besides that. If you love Maverick City Music, which I do, I'm a huge fan, I really love The Story I'll Tell. It's one of my very favorite songs because I so resonate with the notion of you get to decide what you share and how you share your story. And if you're sharing that God showed up in the story. So I think that notion of I'm going to tell the right story here. Mm-hmm. And that's a story where God has not abandoned me. A few others. Goodness of God is a huge favorite.
Oh, that's one of my favorites too.
So good. And honestly, I'm a huge fan of Make It Out Alive by Christian Stanfield, which is not a traditional worship song, but it's the music that he just released that has deeply ministered to me.
Anyway, big fans of Christian around
yes,
here.
We are. I am.
All right, our next question. So you are 41.
Yes.
So what would you tell yourself at 31 and 21 and 11? So we can break that into three. So what would you tell 31-year-old Catherine?
Okay. The decades. Okay, so yeah. Maybe I'll start with the first decade when I'm an 11-year-old.
Okay.
As an 11-year-old, gosh, I think I would say, little Catherine, you have capacity for very hard things because of Jesus in the story with you, and you have no idea how hard life is going to be.
Mm.
But you have no idea what you're made of because God made you to do hard things, and you're going to need to know that, Catherine. You're going to need to believe that.
And don't you think our culture sometimes wants to shield our kids from that reality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And as a mother of an 11-year-old girl,
oh yeah,
I hope that she hears your story and can see that her story might also have those hard things.
Right.
And as parents who are grounding our kids in the gospel, that letting them know that it's okay if it's hard.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard.
It's going to be hard. Have a reality check. Even 11-year-old Catherine or Elliot, that life is hard. In this broken world, life is really hard. But that you can do hard things because he has given you everything you need to do the hard thing in the story he's writing. He will supply all of your needs. It says in Philippians 4:19, his divine power has given you everything that you need. It says in 2 Peter 1:3. And I could go on and on to my 11-year-old self. But sorry, moving on.
So your 21-year-old self, how about that?
Okay, 21-year-old self. So, goodness, I would say, Catherine, you don't have to try so hard. You don't have to be so perfect. You are very wrongly connecting good works for God as, like, I don't know, being the good girl, being the good Christian soldier makes you get the good life.
Right.
I think that's a lie. I definitely probably believed. And, you know, I can say this almost, I didn't want to ever probably talk about this because I didn't want to seem prideful, but please, I'm 41. Who cares? I was Miss Stanford. I almost won Miss Alabama. I emceed Step Sing. I won a lot of awards, just a lot of accolades.
Right.
All through college, I was modeling. And, you know, I needed probably a reality check that I'm not that great. And that, that don't be so naive. I think
right.
I really was not just awake to the suffering of the world. I always had a very compassionate heart. Definitely wasn't mean, but just was very misguided probably.
Yeah. I think most of us were at 21, just out of college.
For sure.
Go easy on yourself there. And then how about 31-year-old self?
Okay, so 31. Well, I could say this about to my 21-year-old self, because I would get married at 22. But then after being married to my 31-year-old self, so 9 years later, I would say marriage will be very hard. And not just because you have a massive stroke and nearly die. Everyone wants to assume like, oh, your marriage must be so, y'all are so incredible. You've stayed together. Your marriage is so perfect. And it is the opposite. Our marriage is actually fairly hard. I'm so glad I'm saying that. I feel therapeutic in those words. We have a hard marriage. We love each other. We're extremely committed to each other. We've really grown up together, including the stroke. However, we're both firstborns. We're both, I mean, we butt heads all the time. We're both controlling. We're both deeply independent. So, marriage has been hard from the beginning. And it wasn't just a stroke that made it hard.
Right.
And yet it has been so beautiful. And I would tell 31-year-old Catherine 10 years ago, hang in there. Life is going to be hard. In this next decade, and it's going to be great at the same time. It's going to be really hard and really good, kind of the theme of this podcast.
Yeah.
That it's going to include things like a move to Atlanta and a new baby, goodness, a baby born at 33, and some really just amazing things, but also some really, really hard stuff, a torn ACL, MCL, a meniscus, and months back in a wheelchair, and some really hard brain diagnoses about my neurological condition, and just a lot of suffering. So I'd say hang in there, and you get to decide how you feel about your story, Catherine. And I'll keep saying that till the day I die.
I love that. Keep saying it. Wave that banner.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, a little bit of a lighter note. What is your favorite family activity?
So I can't drive a car, and Jay is our Uber driver, my permanent Uber driver. So every morning for the morning carpool to get the boys to school, we drive together. So Jay drives, but I ride. And I have to sit in the back seat on the right because of my neck condition. So I'm in the car riding in the back seat with John. And every morning on the way to school, I have a running list on my phone of a point of gratitude in each one of our lives. So now, years into this rhythm, it's really beautiful to see what we were grateful for. And many times it's like current things, like the A on the science test or the weekend we spent with our grandparents or, you know, all just really cool memories or, you know, how summer break is 5 weeks away or whatnot. And it's just an opportunity to really share what's going on with each other. But also it is really a moment to, we pray at the end and thank God for these things in our lives. And always, Jay and I at least will bring up hard things as part of what we're grateful for. And that's very intentional that we want to show our kids that we can thank God for hard struggles in each of our lives. And you know, it's been complicated to unpack recently with the 7-year-old.
Right.
It's like, why would we thank God for pain? And, you know, it's been an ongoing conversation of because pain is such a great teacher.
Yeah.
God is using it in our lives and just all the things. So gratitude.
I love that. I love that you keep it on your phone. That's smart. So you can remember.
Yeah. Totally. So easy.
And you look back. All right. So I get the chance to ask you the question that you ask everyone else that comes on your podcast.
Okay. Yeah.
I hope I say it the right way. So what is good in your story and what is hard in your story right now in your life?
So, I mean, I could definitely talk about medical stuff is hard, but everybody's heard that. So let's skip that one. Everybody knows. I would say what is hard is bopping out constantly to fly all over the country and now Canada and Mexico. And yes, speak and minister. And it's super complicated because I see the impact. Mm-hmm. So I see IRL, which is in real life, if you don't know.
You're not hip on the terms.
Right. I see in real life, like, the impact to the random lady who feels extremely helpless in her life and discouraged, and she feels differently about her story and meeting me in person and me hugging her neck and telling her she's not alone just lands different than on a screen or through a book.
Definitely.
And so it's a holy burden.
Yeah.
So it's wonderful. But then it's also, so that's what's good.
Okay.
And what's hard.
Right.
Because what's hard is leaving my children and being bopping in and out constantly. And the cost is high. I mean, travel is no joke.
Right.
It's not exactly like I'm staying at 5-star hotels.
Right.
I mean, staying at Hampton Inn in Toledo is more the speed, and it's a lot of that.
Right.
You know, and it's just the whole deal is a lot.
Okay. So the second part of that question is, what is the practice that is helping you hold that tension of the good and hard in that?
So pretty much, I am homebound when I'm at home.
Mm.
I very rarely leave my house. Occasionally, I'll have a coffee date with a friend or a meeting at school I have to go to or something mandatory in my mind that I need to be at. And obviously, church and, you know, special things I rally for, of course.
Right.
But in general, like when I am in the city of Atlanta, I am at home as much as possible A, because I want to be around my kids every moment that I can, and B, I do not want my mental health to be too deeply affected by all the travel. So I'm very much like nesting constantly in the house at home. I will not leave my house for days at a time because I have the tremendous privilege of working from home.
Right.
And because of that, I can make it all work.
Right.
And that is a luxury that not everyone is afforded. I'm very aware of that and count it as a tremendous, tremendous gift that I can work from home and make this crazy travel all the time, everywhere work. As you know, Leah, from recently traveling with me to Canada, and maybe we should close with that story because it's too funny not to share. Should you tell it? Maybe
sure.
You should. It's hysterical.
Well, two Southern girls had a trip to Toronto, Canada. It's my first time traveling with Catherine, so I had to learn how to fold the wheelchair and do all of the things that come with getting through security and, you know, all the things that Catherine has learned to navigate over the last 15 years. So this is my first time, and I'm like, we've got this. It's going to be great. So great, smooth travels, traveling mercies that day, right? And then we land in Canada, and it snowed 18 inches in 6 hours, which I grew up in Michigan and have still never seen anything like that.
And it was a full-on blizzard.
Blizzard.
Yeah.
Like, open the door and you're pelted in the face and covered.
I was hazing Leah.
Yeah. So our flight got canceled. She spoke at the event. The event went off without a hitch. It was a wonderful event.
Which, side note, it was the largest gathering of Christians, youth,
young
in
adults,
the country,
yeah.
Young adults in the country of Canada. It was really, really cool. Check it out. We'll put it in the show notes. It's precious.
It was a great event, beautiful sunny day, and then our flight got canceled.
Right.
So we had to get out because it was our kids' spring break starting, but we got home, long story short, but definitely that was the start of a very busy travel season.
No, after we took an Uber across the border to get to Buffalo, New York, we literally Ubered to another country.
We did.
It was nuts, but yeah,
but we made it home 15 minutes earlier than we were supposed to.
Well, exactly, because we weren't going to have to change planes, and we didn't, and it was... Yeah.
We made it.
It was great, whatever. I was hazing you.
Yeah, thank you for that. Well, anyway, I can say as someone who has a front row seat to your good, hard story that you steward that assignment well. So I know it's hard, and I know being away from your family is hard, but you do a wonderful job.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. It feels so weird to do an Ask Me Anything. I got to be honest. I pray something in this has encouraged you in your life and that in your story, whatever it looks like, that you can remember that God made you for really, really hard things and He will show up in your story and fill you with hope. Hope that eventually can overflow. God bless you guys. Thank you for joining us on the Good Hard Story podcast. To learn more about what we are doing, follow us on Instagram at Hope Heals. Check out all things Hope Heals at hopeheals.com. Don't forget to subscribe to this wherever you get podcasts, and please feel free to share this episode with somebody who needs to hear it. Good Hard Story Podcast is a production of Good Hard Story, LLC. It is produced and edited by Leah Case and Mary Austin Hall. And I am your fearless and fabulous host, Catherine Wolf. Come back and join us every week where we believe that the good story and the hard story can be the very same story. With you and for you, friends.